This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
And welcome back into The Score for Sunday evening, March 29th. I'm David Schuster. I'm going to keep company for another hour up until 8 o'clock this evening. Our number, as always, here on The Score, 312-644-6767. And, of course, you can text us at 67011. The Tech Zone brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. And a reminder, a programming reminder, we will start replaying the Cubs' run to the World Championship 2016. It begins on Wednesday night, Game 1 of the National League Divisional Series. It begins 6 o'clock on Wednesday evening. And with that in mind, let's go back out to the El Pamonte Ford Hotline, El Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Bring in my buddy Bruce Levine. You can follow him on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. And Bruce, of course, covers everything baseball here in Chicago and is a host of Inside the Clubhouse each and every Saturday right here on The Score. And Bruce, you know, we're going to play the 17 games in 17 days here on The Score starting on Wednesday night. And as I was thinking about it, you and I traveled to all, well, of course, locally we're here at all the games, but we traveled to all the games together to San Francisco, Los Angeles, and finally in Cleveland. I have a lot of memories of those. And, you know, one of the memories starting with San Francisco, I remember, didn't we run into Chris Bryant's family on Fisherman's Wharf one afternoon?
Yeah, we did. And I remember saying to you, those aren't pillows. Is that correct?
Yes. Can we tell that story on the air? No, we had some great stories, and maybe the funniest one of all was when after they won the whole thing and the plane that we were coming back to Chicago after Cleveland winning Game 7 of the World Series, and the plane was flooded. And I still can remember saying to the person, what do you mean the plane is flooded? It's a plane. It's not a submarine. What are you talking about? But the plane was flooded. How weird was that?
I guess we could write a book about our own travels there. I don't know how many would sell, but it would be interesting to me. Yeah, nonetheless, we had some great traveling times there, and I think it to me that what stood out most of all those games was certainly Game 4 in San Francisco, because what was an obvious loss and having to face Johnny Cueto the next day in Chicago because it was going to be Game 5 of that series. The Cubs miraculously pulled out that game in the top of the ninth inning and just went on from there, and it was pretty much an exciting playoff all the way, and certainly nothing more exciting than the World Series. But that's where it all started for me.
Yeah, well, one of the themes of that postseason, Bruce, and it was certainly culminated in the World Series when they rallied from 3-1 to win the last three games, winning Game 5 at Wrigley and the last two games in Cleveland. And that's another memory, by the way. It was 80 degrees in Cleveland in November. How weird was that? Maybe that was a good omen. But the Cubs rallied, you know, in all three of those series, if I'm not mistaken. Certainly they were behind against San Francisco, and they had that big rally, like you said, in Game 4. But, you know, they were a team that just didn't quit that postseason.
Yeah, I mean, they were loaded, and, you know, they had terrific pitching and, you know, the great bullpen solidified by Chapman. Chapman was toasty even going into the series because he and Joe really never saw eye to eye about how he should be used. Joe looked at him as a soldier of fortune, a guy that they had the good fortune to have for 2 months of the season. And from the very beginning, Chapman didn't like the way he was being used. Nonetheless, saved 20 out of 22 games. And certainly, I don't think they get all the way without him. But nonetheless, that was a loaded team with the most confident players in the world. I'll never forget, David, going up to it was Chris Bryant after they lost. I think it was, they went down, was it 3-1? Or three games to two.
No, it was after game four. They were down 3-1. We were at Wrigley,
right.
And he didn't exactly pull a Joe Namath, but he was pretty damn close. He said, "We're going to come back."
Yeah, you know, right. And you know what? He even gave me the metrics on it. He said, "No team in the major leagues has won 3 games in a row more than we have."
That's right.
I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah, we've done it 17 times." And sure enough, that's exactly what the Cubs did. And that type of confidence, he looked at us square in the eye, David, and said, we're going to win this. And, you know, I know the guy didn't drink, and I knew he didn't do any drugs. So this was a very confident guy and a very confident team, and certainly one for the ages, no doubt.
Yeah, I remember that very distinctly now, Bruce. I mean, you know, the clubhouse was pretty much void of players that, you know, after that game. And it was sort of morose. They went down 3-1, as you mentioned. But there he was. And Bryant was always there for the media. There's no question. And always has been there for the media. And he stood up, you know, very, proud and said, "We're going to do this." And basically, that's exactly what they did. You know, that whole season, though, Bruce, you know, I'm going back, and sometimes you have to go back and take a look at things to remember this. I mean, the Cubs won that division by 17.5 games. They won 103 games that season. I mean, they were a powerhouse. So that's why they had the confidence to do what they ultimately, exactly what they did.
They had the best record in baseball for every, I think, just about every game except maybe toward the All-Star game when they faltered, if you remember, and the Giants for a day or two had the best record in baseball. But quickly the Cubs got that back, and after the All-Star break they just escalated, stepped on the metal and just took it all the way. And that was certainly a fun season to watch. I mean, you and I both covered the 2005 White Sox World Series run, and that had its ebbs and flows as well, just as much fun in its own time. But this one, you know, because of the 108 years and the extreme drama that went all the way through to the very last out of the very last game, don't know if you can get any better than that.
And that's why it's a treat, you know, that the station is playing these 17 games in 17 days. And, you know, Bruce, like, and I'm watching a lot of these old Michael Jordan playoff series against the Knicks, and I'm sure they'll play some other ones as well. Unfortunately, there's no live sports right now, and God willing, it'll be back sometime near term. But, you know, for me personally, I mean, I'm watching and I'm listening to games that I was at, so I didn't have the pleasure of, you know, watching them or listening to them because I was at them. So for me, it sort of like brings me back to that, and I do appreciate it, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will as well. But let's go to the current times right now, because unfortunately, there's not much going on, and no matter what question I may ask, there's no answer because people just don't know because of what's unfortunately going on in the world. But Major League Baseball, a few days ago, and you were very quick to write a story about it, you know, had an agreement between the owners and the players' union on what may happen going forward, and maybe you can just capsulize, you know, what the two sides agreed upon.
Sure, David. The number one thing for the players, and I don't know if fans care or not. I know they're always interested in how the game is working on and off the field. The number one thing for players is that they will be granted service time for 2020, whether one game is played, 120 games played, or no games are played. So they will be, the Mookie Bettses of the world will be a free agent in November, regardless of how many games are played. Full service time for Chris Bryant, for Javier Baez, for Kyle Schwarber, for Anthony Rizzo, all who will be free agents in November of 2021. So that's very significant, and that's what the players wanted the most, the idea that they were not going to be frozen out from their rights to continue to be free agents and move on. For the owners, they came across with $170 million for the players for April and May. They will get paid that amount on Tuesday, April 1st, and they will get they'll get their money then divided up the way the union figures they want to. I mean, $170 million is about $210,000 a player, okay? Just to give you a perspective on it, that's probably enough for a rookie who makes about $590,000 a year. So that would be an overpayment for those 2 months of a few thousand dollars. But in the case of let's look at Max Scherzer, okay, making $30 million. He gets paid $2.5 million every 2 weeks starting in April. That's probably not going to cover it. So they're going to have to figure out a way to divide that money up. The June draft will be only five rounds. Normally it's many more. And anybody that signs after the fifth round will only get $20,000 if they choose to sign. The owners can implement that as well for 2021. Players who were in camp for on minor league contracts to make good all will get 45 days of major league severance starting April 1st. Some of the other things going on as far as the future, you know, we don't know how many games are going to be played. Certainly nothing in that area. We know that spring training most likely is going to be 3 weeks from everybody I've talked to, that it's going to be a 3-week spring training if and when they're ready to go.
Bruce, I'm a little surprised, actually. I mean, it seems like the players got a lot. What did the owners get? And, you know, talking initially like you did about the service time, mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I'm surprised by that because the owners, I mean, look, Mookie Betts might be a free agent and never play 1 second out in a Dodgers uniform.
Right. Well, you know, keep in mind something that I try to keep in perspective for myself, and I try to pass it on from time to time. Baseball... In sports in particular, all the sports, the players are not only the worker, but they are the product, okay? Mm-hmm. So they are both. Without the player, there is no sport, okay? So from that perspective, they're in a very unique situation because they can be replaced, but the players aren't going to be very good if they're not the major league players. It'll be a bad game. But besides that, the April and May payments are a make good thing. There won't be June, July, August, September unless baseball is being played. So this isn't on for perpetuity. This is it, you know, right now. Until the owners and players can monetize the sport by having games on TV, radio, advertising, the Major League Baseball package, the package that Fox has, that TBS has, that the other ESPN has, there will be no more money for the players. So this is just a very temporary thing. We will be very lucky to have baseball before May is over. So the players are getting that, and the owners are getting back the idea, as you said, not a lot, but just a control over the June draft, which can cost owners anywhere between $6 and $10 million, depending on what their drafts are all about.
All right. Some of the other news that came out of the negotiations, if you will, is and again, there's no definitive answers on anything because you just don't know still, and we might not know for quite a while, if ever there's even baseball for the 2020 season, and hopefully there is, of course. But, you know, they're going to try and cram in as many games as they can. I don't know if 162 is even feasible or reasonable at this point, but they'll try and cram in as many as they can. There is talk of going back to like the old days of having doubleheaders. I saw seven-inning doubleheaders, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they'll, if there's doubleheaders, they'll be nine innings. But they're also talking about expanding the season later to get in as many games. Mm-hmm. November and December, and playing in warm weather or dome sites and having the World Series at a neutral site. I mean, are all of these or any of these feasible?
I think everything's in play as far as conversation goes. I don't see how you can play a major league season after November 1st, okay? You can't take the Chicago Cubs and have a home game in Arizona or in Los Angeles or in Miami. That's just not going to work. I mean, it's not within character of the game or the fan bases. Every team is based around their own fan base, okay? And they get their energy, they get all their money from the fans that support them. So if you're having home games that mean something during the regular season, they're not played in Chicago or in Detroit or in Midwest cities where there's cold weather, it's going to be very difficult to imagine that happening. Now, you get to the playoffs, that's another matter. If you get into the late November situation and you want to play the playoffs, you're not going to be able to play in the Midwest, okay? So, you know, for this 1 year, I think people are going to have to maybe man up and deal with it. I just don't see any comfort level with baseball playing in November anywhere, okay? It just doesn't make sense to me. You're only going to have just a very few cities in the major leagues that are going to have decent enough weather to be able, for you to be able to play. So everything is on the table, David, but a lot of these things just do not make sense. Baseball in December doesn't make any sense to me unless you're down in Mexico or the Dominican Republic watching some Winter League games.
Yeah, I was going to say the Caribbean World Series will be the World Series this year.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Mark Grody asked me an interesting question. I think it was Mark the other day. You know, if baseball comes back and they have, I don't know, 80 games, 90 games, whatever it may be, if that's indeed what it turns out to be, mm-hmm. do you see the league, the sport, you know, experimenting with something because, you know, the whole thing is, I don't know, different to begin with? Could they do something different for those 90 games that you wouldn't normally see just to throw it out there and maybe it turns out to be successful, maybe it doesn't, but it was only during a 90-game season anyway, so what the heck? I mean, do you see anything like that potentially happening?
I mean, outside of the universal DH, no.
Okay.
I think they could use that as a springboard to 2022, and after the basic agreement ends in 2021, that everybody wants the DH. Personally, you know, I've never liked the DH. I understand people like it because you got, you know, nine hitters, you don't have a pitcher up there, but sorry, I was raised on National League Baseball, always loved it. That said, they could very well experiment with the DH because it'll probably feel that it'll protect their pitchers a little bit even more. But I don't see any experiments like, you know, automatic umpires or split seasons where you have a first half of 40 games and a second half of 40 games. I don't see anything like that happening.
Hey, Bruce, I mean, you know, again, no answers to any questions, no matter what, how many I ask you. But when they finally figure it out, how are they going to figure out schedules here? I mean, the schedule that we've all had is not going to be adhered to. Don't they have to start from scratch?
I don't think they can. I think they're just going to have to pick it up where it's at. And, you know, that causes, you know, division races to be skewed because you're not playing the same amount of games in your division against your division opponents. In some cases, if it goes long enough, you won't even face your division opponent maybe more than once or twice, and you're still going to be a division winner. So I just don't think that there'll be enough time to come up with a quote-unquote new schedule. It'll be too difficult. I think the only way it's been described to me is that they just have to pick it up where it starts and figure out the semantics of it as you move along.
All right, final two questions. Bruce, appreciate your time. You can always follow Bruce on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. What in general, and we'll talk specifically about the Cubs and the White Sox, but what in general are teams doing right now? I mean, are they sitting at home like we are right now? What are they doing?
Well, you know, I've seen some pictures of them dancing. I've seen some players you know, dancing in their living room. It's kind of amusing and fun, but I don't know if that's exactly the exercise you're going to need to be ready. Now, I don't think they're doing much more than anybody else right now. They might be playing catch in the backyard, but, how many people you're going to have contact with? Is your wife or your kid's going to catch you if you're throwing 95 miles an hour?
Right.
I mean, I think everybody's limited because you can't go to health clubs in most places. You can't,
right.
You can't participate with anybody, and everybody's freaked out to be in a room with anybody they don't know that's not their family. So
yeah.
I don't think they're doing very much at this point. A lot of them are doing some very nice charitable things, like Anthony Rizzo. They don't
right.
get much better than Anthony Rizzo, and raising money for people and for this cause. I think it's sensational. So they're doing their best there. But as far as any participation in being ready, other than your own gym and your own house, I don't think you have much chance to stay ready baseball-wise. That's why it's going to take a good 3 weeks for these guys to get ready once it happens.
You know, follow up to that question. I mean, the Cubs sent a pitcher down to AAA. The White Sox mm-hmm. sent Michael Kopech down to AAA. I mean, these are both going to happen anyway, but what was the reason, if any, for the timing of doing that? They didn't have to do anything, and he's not playing a AAA right now or anywhere. So why do it this past week?
Well, Tuesday, if you're on the 25-man roster, it's service time.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay. So I think that's the magic answer for this. And a lot of these players are on split contracts, major and minor league contracts. I think because Kopech's been off, he's on it. And so same thing with Maples, the last Cub to be sent down. So yeah. I think those are two decent reasons why they were sent out before this agreement was made with Major League Baseball and the players about players being paid on April the 1st.
Bruce, I guess the only good thing regarding baseball with what's going on in the world right now is that at least here in Chicago, whenever baseball hopefully will start being played, it won't be in bad weather like we've been experiencing. It's been torrential rains for the last couple of days. I took a walk outside today, and honestly, the winds were gusting at 45 miles an hour or something like that, ridiculous. So if we were at the ballpark like we would have been on the south side earlier today, I mean, there would have been, depending on which way the wind was blowing, there would have even been 600-foot home runs or would have been pop-ups that landed over the roof behind us. So, again, if there was any good thing, and I mean the only, and I'm tongue-in-cheek saying this, that's the only good thing about what's going on. And hopefully there will be baseball, and hopefully it'll be semi-soon.
Yeah, the only good thing would be being that new refurbished press box that everybody has with air conditioning and heating, and
yeah,
windows
right.
that go up and down automatically.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Wow. What an innovation.
The final piece of the renovation of Wrigley Field that no one cares about except for the, 50 or 60 people in the media. That's going to be in place, so that's about it. But you're right. Nobody likes April baseball very much, but we all miss April baseball. We all miss
sure.
April NBA. We all miss all the sports right now more than anyone could ever think of. And hopefully when they're back, we'll continue to have a fine appreciation for the toy store that we play in within the realm of real life.
You know, it's interesting, Bruce, final thought here. They're talking about pushing everything back, the Indianapolis 500, the Kentucky Derby, the PGA, all the different sports, yada, 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 and everything's going to be pushed back, hopefully, to later in the calendar year. So you talk about, I remember cramming for tests, of which I never did good on anyway, at the last minute, but all these sports are going to be crammed into a small time frame from like August on, including baseball. I mean, it could be like unbelievable, and hopefully we even see that, knock on wood.
Yeah, I believe the World Series is going to be played in one day now. So get ready for those 24 hours of baseball, because it's going to be all seven games in one day on December the 2nd of 2020. It's going to be interesting to watch. I know we all miss it greatly. We appreciate people in the media, and I think I can speak for you and everybody at the station, really appreciate all the listeners and all the people that watch sports more now than ever, because we've always considered ourselves lucky to be able to report from sports and be involved in sports. And when it's taken away, it's really difficult on a lot of different levels.
No question. I'm having withdrawals like I've never had in my life when it comes to, you know, listen, I may bitch every now and then about extra innings and rain delays and all that stuff. I have. I'm the first to say it. But I'll tell you what, I of course, would trade in for what's going on right now for a nice 4-hour rain delay. You never thought you'd ever hear that from me, did you?
We'll be really excited to see the game starting April 1st on The Score with Ron and Pat and Joe doing the pre and post game. The first time in history, I think we can safely say the first time in history that the guys who actually did the game, being Pat and Ron, will actually do their own pre and post game of those games as they go forward in to start the game, catching up in the third or fourth inning, and then doing a recap at the end. It should be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it.
Very interactive is the right word here. And Bruce, I hope to see you at the ballpark real soon for everybody's sake. And in the meantime, you take care of yourself.
All right, you as well. Thanks, David.
All right, thanks. That's Bruce Levine. You can always follow him on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Let's take a break. We'll be back right after this.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
He is a freaking machine.
Joe Buck, and we're going to get to an interview with Matt Spiegel from Hit and Run today in just a second. 312-644-6767 is our phone number. David Schuster here until the top of the hour when we'll go to CBS Sports Radio. The Grobber Les Grobs theme will be on at midnight, and then all the normal shows will be back starting tomorrow morning. And again, a programming reminder, we will start replaying the Cubs' run to the World Championship 2016. 17 games in 17 days, and it begins Wednesday night with Game 1 of the National League Divisional Series, 6 o'clock right here on The Score. And I'll be on The Score tomorrow night with Mark Grody. In fact, we're going to have so much fun tomorrow night, we'll do a Tuesday night as well. But for right now, let's go to an interview that Matt Spiegel, really good interview, Matt Spiegel did today on Hit and Run with Joe Buck.
The criticism, that was the one thing that used to kill me, like that I was unexcited to be there. I mean, I can't wait to get to Miami. I can't wait to do the game.
Here in Super Bowl 54, tonight on Fox. And now welcome inside the broadcast booth, everybody. I'm Joe Buck.
I mean, it's a privilege to be there. It sounds corny, but it is. And there's only a select number of people that have ever gotten to do it. And now here we are 50 years after the fact that the Chiefs were last in it and they won it. And my dad did it on TV.
Hello again. We're at the Sugar Bowl, Tulane Stadium in New Orleans. And it is time for the Super Bowl. Hi, I'm Jack Buck.
Cram is already on the shoulders of his players. And after being vanquished by Green Bay in 1967, the Chiefs are the champions of pro football.
It's just pretty crazy the way all this stuff has come full circle.
And they have done it. Chiefs are Super Bowl champions here in Miami. As they win it here in Super Bowl 54.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Welcome back in on 670 The Score. You heard the voices of Joe Buck and Jack Buck mixed in there, along with our big voice guy, Russ Matera, on our way in. And Joe Buck joins us right now, joins me right now, on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Love the sound of your dad from the Sugar Bowl doing a little pregame there, Joe Buck.
Yeah, and I don't think you and I talked about it, but I wasn't even really aware. Maybe we did, but I wasn't aware that he had called it, and it was the only Super Bowl he ever called on TV, and then to do it 50 years later is, I don't know. It had some mystical feel to it. So what did I do? I wore his watch that he gave me during that Super Bowl, and I had his money clip, which had his family crest on it from way back in Ireland, and I had that in my pocket. So I was channeling my inner Jack Buck and had him definitely with me when I made that call this last February in Miami.
Oh, that's awesome. I love the image of the money clip with the family crest. We should bring those back, family crests, I think. We should.
Don't even know that they're real. I mean, are they real? Doesn't everybody kind of have the same family crest from back in the day?
There's a sword. There's a sword. There's a giant mug of mead of some kind, right?
Yeah. And then leg. It's like, this is us. This is our family crest. No, it isn't. It's everybody's family crest.
Actually, your dad came up in one of the play-by-plays that you did. I'll bring that up later, but I loved the reference that you made in it. But this has been really cool, Joe Buck. I don't know why. It's been kind of oddly satisfying and calming to hear you do play-by-play of random moments in everyday life as you've been doing. It's funny, my friend Adam Hogue got in there with his son, just rudely blocking a shot of his son playing basketball inside the house, and other stuff. For anybody that's missed it, let's play a little bit of it. This is some darts. Joe Buck doing play-by-play of some vicious darts action.
This man has the characteristics of some sort of witch. Big fan of the Blues Brothers and can throw darts at some crazy angle. All right, let's roll it. First throw. Very close to a bullseye. Little short, little long with that one. And now he's got it. A bullseye. It's happened. Tom Martin has stunned himself and the world. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy.
I don't know why this has been so satisfying and calming. Has it been satisfying to you to do this stuff?
No, totally. Yeah, I've enjoyed it. And it doesn't, as I've said a couple times on other shows, you know, I try to make it as spontaneous as I can. I'm not looking at the video 100 times and writing out a script. I would rather try to do it the way I do a game and just naturally be surprised by what happens. So I'll watch it through one time or I'll fast forward through it just to see how long it is. Cause some are 18 seconds, some are 2 minutes, like the marble race. And then I'll just sit at my desk talking to a microphone, send the file to Fox. They match it up to the video. Then they crank it back out, I guess through me, you know, they email me back the links. And then I put them back up on Twitter, and it's been fun. It was a total whim. It was something that my boss and I talked about a week before they actually started to hit the internet. And we were kind of joking, and then I added the charity arm to it and wanted to, instead of doing play-by-play of viral videos, which seemed really self-serving, just do it of people in quarantine just like everybody else, just like us here in St. Louis, you know, locked in the walls of our house with 2-year-old twins and sometimes going crazy and fighting over nothing and then realizing how great we have it all in the same hour. And I wanted to do it that way. And now we're basically 10 million views of these videos, which I never thought was, I mean, I wouldn't have even thought 50,000 views, let alone 10 million.
Well, yeah, the way you described the quarantine is so right. Me and my wife just at each other's throats over absolutely nothing and then immediately laughing shortly thereafter. And I think I've done all the puzzles. If you have any puzzles of any kind, jigsaw or otherwise.
I have puzzles, but they're geared toward 2-year-olds. So I think you'd probably rip through them pretty fast. Like the orange fits into the circle. The pizza fits into the triangle. That's kind of what we're doing over here, which has been challenging to me, but I think you're smarter than I am.
Yeah, just a hair, I think. But it's
no, totally. Why do you have to bring up hair?
I can't help myself. It's my own fault.
God.
I know. Ever since you
what
saw
a narcissist.
The picture, yeah, you saw the picture of me. I sent it just to show you. I think the lizard or the kid or something, and all you looked at was the hair. That's all you saw.
I didn't see a kid. I didn't see a lizard. I saw no child. I just saw a full head of hair, which, as you know, just immediately ticks me off. And in fact, I just did a video yesterday, or it hit the internet yesterday, of Justin Thomas of the PGA Tour gently placing his remaining follicles into their proper place in the morning. He sent it to me. He's like, what can I do? I want you to do a video of mine and post it. I said, well, I've seen you make fun of your hairline. I've made a career now of making fun of my hairline. Send me a video of you placing your hair in the morning and I'll do play-by-play of that, which he did. Then he wanted me to involve Jordan Spieth, who also has a retreating hairline. So I got Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth in the same video, ripped on Jordan at Justin's behest.
They, you can find this stuff at Buck on the Twitters. See, it's brilliant to make a career out of the hairline conversation, because what you're doing is something that any entertainer worth his salt eventually does. Mark Maron, I think, said it best, that he became a comic because he wanted to control why people were laughing at him. Like, people are going to laugh at you no matter what. But if you can control why they're laughing at you, then all of a sudden it just doesn't pack any punch. You know?
Yeah, well, I have friends like that. I have a friend of mine's wife who shall remain nameless, but every time, you know, we end up in the same place, she comes at it on offense, and I think it's just her defense mechanism. And she's a very pretty girl, and she's, you know, there's nothing that she doesn't have going for her, but when you see her, it's just like, oh, so we're growing a beard now, are we? Got a little more gray in there than the last time I saw you. Then you spend the next 35 seconds defending your beard, your gray in your beard, and yourself, and therefore in her mind she's thinking, well, you don't have anything to come at me with because there's just no time. And so, yeah, I think, you know, for Mark Maron, that's how all of us grew up on the playground. I mean, I was a little fat kid on the playground, and I mean, throughout middle school, and there was this other guy, and he and I would, people would gather around to watch us rip on each other. And it, I think it developed my play-by-play skills, developed whatever blunt wit I have, and it was probably great training that I wasn't even aware I was undergoing at the time, but it was valuable. Now, that said, you never really get over the scars inflicted on the playground, which has kept a therapist in my life and fully funded for the next, I don't know, 20, 25 years.
Yeah, well, you know, right there with us. A solid 30 years in therapy has only crystallized the things that I continue to have to work on. This is sort of
yeah. Well,
sort of
I'm actually starting. I'm actually, you're the first person I'm even telling publicly, but starting a podcast on Thursday. I've broken down. It's actually happened. I'm doing a podcast with Oliver Hudson, who is, well, the name of the podcast is Daddy Issues, because we both have daddy issues and we are both dads. And he is obviously Goldie Hawn's son, Kate Hudson's yeah. brother, Wyatt Russell's brother, and Kurt Russell's stepson. And his father was an actor and entertainer. So he's got daddy issues a mile long. I have maybe a quarter mile's worth of daddy issues. And then it's about kind of, you know, how we navigate the world as fathers in 2020.
Wow, that's awesome. I look forward to it. Did you read the Springsteen book, Joe, as we have a conversation on the air that could be off the air, but that's my prerogative, damn it. Did you read the Springsteen book by chance?
I know, and it's sitting in my office. And so if you're going to tell me right now that that's something I need to read, and yeah. he's somebody I need to try to corral to come on this thing, then tell me now. Yes. And I'll go grab it and start this afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the stuff about his music and his career is amazing, and it's so well thought out what he decided to do and how he went about it. I recommend the book so highly. But he writes about his dad in a beautiful way. It made me write down a quote. I'll share it with you, because once his dad passed away, he wrote this: "Those whose love we wanted but could not get, we emulate. It is dangerous, but it makes us feel closer, gives us an illusion of the intimacy we never had." And that has killed, right? Isn't that oof?
Ooh.
It kills me. I think about my mom. For me, it's my mom. I just wasn't close enough. And so I've ended up being like her an awful lot. It's dangerous, but it makes me feel closer. Isn't that good?
It's beautiful and it's deep. And I think it's more what, and I'm not being funny about this, it's more what Oliver deals with. And then on my side of it, I think I, for the rest of my life, at least around St. Louis and for people of a certain age, I will always be compared to and never match up to the legend of my dad, which grows with each passing day. So I think that yeah. that's kind of my side of it. As far as were we close, did I have his love? Yeah, we were very close, and I knew that And I knew that I had his love, and we were not afraid to say it to each other. I remember one time he was sitting in the media lunchroom at Busch Stadium. I don't know who the visiting team was. We'll say the Cubs for purpose of this conversation in Chicago. And he was sitting at a table, and whenever he walked into the media lunchroom, everybody kind of congregated around him, and he was telling stories and whatever. And I walked in later, and he and I were radio partners with Mike Shannon, and I walked in, and I was always affectionate with my dad, and I leaned in, and I gave him a kiss on the forehead. And he said, "Take it easy, Buck. Not everybody knows we're father and son." Which is probably more appropriate for 2001 or 2000, whenever this transpired. But that was just his quick wit and sense of humor and why people congregated to him. So while I had his love and while I had his attention, and he took me everywhere by the time I was 12 around the National League, I also shared him with everybody. So it was kind of a give and take. I knew that I had a piece of him, but man, everybody had a small piece of him, in this small town of St. Louis. And, yeah, I was always fighting against that. And I'll always be compared, even if it's not real in my mind, to the legend of my dad. So that's kind of how we're coming at this thing. But I've now you've made me salivate over, the Springsteen book, if it's that well written.
Oh, it's alarmingly well-written. It's maddeningly well-written. You're like, you're not supposed to be this good at this, too. How dare you be this good?
Did he write it with somebody, or is it him putting pen to paper or him putting fingers to keyboard, I wonder?
I think it's just him. I've actually listened to the audiobook, and it's him doing the audiobook, which is even more compelling.
There's some depth there. I mean, you're a music guy, and so I'm totally jealous of that. Just your ability to do what you do in that world. And, you know, you and I have talked, so this isn't a huge name drop. You and I have talked about Eddie Vedder, and we've been together with Eddie after Cubs games across the street. And when I get a text from him, especially the long ones, if it's been a while, or I'm doing a big game and he sees it or whatever, it's a text that is like, I don't know, probably the bulk of it is probably 6-8 inches long, and it's spaced out well, and it's so perfectly written that you want to put music to his text. And he and Springsteen are very close and are constantly watching sporting events that I'm doing, and they will both end up sending me, you know, some note on whatever game I'm doing. I'm not saying any of that to name drop. I'm saying that because their ability to write almost supersedes their ability to play or put music to. That's what makes them great. Yeah, they're great guitarists. Yeah, they have the ability to put music to their words. But the words and the depth of them and what they mean, I think, makes them the Hall of Famers that they are.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. I'll tell you this from the Bruce book. It's also a matter of how you think about your career, and maybe you can relate from when you started at Fox doing football. You were what, 23, 24, something like that?
Yeah, I was 24, and I was 24 when I got hired. I think I was 25 when I was at Soldier Field on opening day in 1994. Yeah, I was definitely
amazing.
25 with the Bears taking on the Buccaneers, and me sitting there wondering what the hell I was doing because I'd never done football before.
Wow, that's incredible. The Springsteen had this whole life as a bluesy, psychedelic lead guitar player, like a long-haired psychedelic guitar hero, like he was in Cream or something like that.
Right.
And and they toured and they did this whole thing. And then he was 22, I think it was, and he had this meeting with this powerful guy in New York, and he realized, you know what? Yeah, I'm not going to be special as a guitar player. I'm not going to be special as a singer. I got to do it as a writer. And he hunkered down for like 8 months and just wrote a batch of songs and said, I got to make myself special as a writer. That's what's going to make me unique.
Wow.
And he wrote Greetings from Asbury Park. But imagine having the self-awareness to look at yourself and say, this doesn't make me special. I'm going to have to do this. And then doing it. It's crazy.
It is. And it's those people that have the ability to get up to 30,000 feet and look down at their life and see – what their path is, or being aware enough to know what differentiates his career compared to whomever. I don't know. I mean, the great guitar players of all time are well documented. And a documentary, which I'm sure you've seen, It Might Get Loud, I think it's called.
This so good with loud. All the guitar players. It Might Get Loud.
Oh my
yeah.
God. It's amazing. But you know, to have the ability to write, I mean, that's depths of mind that I don't think ever leaves you. And I see it with Eddie, and I certainly with the following that Bruce has. And I've never been a diehard Springsteen guy for whatever reason, but I probably will be after I read this book.
Yeah, it kind of brings you there. Talking with Joe Buck on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. There's a great moment, and It Might Get Loud, if anybody hasn't seen it. It's The Edge and Jack White and Jimmy Page kind of talking guitar and playing guitar, where Jimmy Page is listening to Link Wray playing Rumble. And you can tell it's one of the first things that ever like turned his mind on to music. And he has this look of joy, like an 8-year-old listening to something and just it lighting him on fire. And that's the feeling I try to always access about baseball if I can. Like, I loved it so much as a kid, and now we know how the sausage is made and we get a little closer, but still you can let yourself get there every once in a while. And I know for you, you've told me that you can do that with the St. Louis Blues as a fan. You can have that kind of innocent sort of joy and appreciation. I wonder if you can feel that about baseball, and maybe even this long pause will make you feel a longing for it that some of us are feeling right now.
Yeah, well, for sure. I was yesterday flipping around channels, and I got to MLB Network, and they had 1986 Game 5 of the NLCS, and it was Doc Gooden against Nolan Ryan, a young Doc Gooden against an aging, I think he was 39 at the time, Nolan Ryan. Those lineups are just fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I can remember everybody in each lineup, and I think about how I felt about baseball. That was 17 at that point. And my God, it just watching baseball from Shea Stadium, for anybody that ever worked inside Shea Stadium, and even diehard Mets fans would tell you that place was just a dump. But seeing it on TV again, I was like, God, I miss that stadium, and I miss those camera angles and the view, like from the on deck circle out into that kind of weird left field and the apple that would pop up, which I know they moved over, but it just doesn't have the same feel for me. And just baseball at that time, baseball was so, I mean, that was my life back then. And now I've had, you know, with kids and other parts of my career and whatever, you go back and you start watching some of that stuff. Like I could sit here in my living room or my bedroom and just watch straight like the 1980s of baseball, not the 70s, not the 90s. For me, it would be the 1980s of Major League Baseball.
That was Joe Buck on with Matt Spiegel much earlier today on Hit and Run. Really good interview. And listen, I'm with him. I could watch the 70s and 80s baseball because that's basically when I grew up watching some great, great ball players at that time. Listen, I had a great time here today. I hope you did as well. Following the broadcast of the Bears and Saints game, the NFC title game, Jeff Joniak was on very quickly right afterwards, and we talked about that game and everything concerning the Bears. We had Tom Doerr on to talk about the Bulls championship years and his association with that special 55-point game by Michael Jordan at Madison Square Garden. And, of course, we have Bruce Levine on to talk everything about baseball, and hopefully baseball and all other sports will continue in the near future. My special thanks also to both co-pilots and producers downtown, Adam Studzinski and Julio Roseo. And again, as I started the show, I'm going to end the show. Special, special thanks to all the people who are on the front lines of what's going on in the world right now. All the healthcare people, the doctors, the nurses, everybody who works in the healthcare profession, and all the people who are still working their jobs. Some of us are very fortunate to do what we're doing in our professions at home. And others are on the front lines, and we do appreciate and love all you people. You are the real heroes of society. I'll be back on tomorrow night, with Mark Grody from 6 to 10. In fact, we'll do it both Monday and Tuesday night. CBS Sports Radio will take you up until midnight, and then at midnight, as always, it'll be Les Grabstein, the grabber here in the captain's chair. 312-644-6767. Take care, everybody. Be safe. We'll talk to you real soon.
Nice to see y'all. We're going to go have a Chick-fil-A.
Gusto es mio siempre, socio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.